I think the one piece, thank you for that introduction. I was the parish minister in Hunterdon County for 7 years, if you were wondering where that was. So I'm fully American, in case you were worried. It has been a tumultuous and, for many of us, worrisome time in the life of this country. So I am unabashedly starting off on a light note. Among the many humorous things posted and reposted online, right up there with funny cat tricks and the now infamous Charlie Bit My Finger video, you have probably all seen internet postings of funny church signboards that say things they actually don't really mean to say. For instance, there was this one from Mount Pleasant Baptist Church: "Do you know what hell is? Come hear our preacher." Most signs that get internet fame are folksy, jokey messages like that, that play off of mainstream Protestant culture usually. However, sometimes they sound positively Unitarian Universalist, as this one from the Rose City Park United Methodist Church that read, "We don't want gay marriage to upset the sanctity of your third marriage." It's a good crowd today, thank you. And some transcend all denominational or liberal conservative boundaries. Who among the church or temple going couldn't relate to this sign that reads, "Our church is like fudge, sweet with a few nuts"? Now, of course, my sermon today isn't about church signs, however funny or winsome they might be. It is, however, about signs for the church, for our UU congregations. It's about which signs we ought to be reading now, today, in order to figure out what it is we're called to do this generation to move human hope and human loving forward. What are the signs of our times? The truth of the matter is, many of us have been experiencing a kind of spiritual and intellectual whiplash lately, as news reaches us nearly every day of another assault on some of the values that we as Unitarian Universalists typically hold most dear, no matter how we vote in the ballot box. Among others, I am especially thinking of executive branch attacks on an independent judiciary and clear attempts at voter suppression, both of which are attacks on our fifth UU principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large. We call that a religious principle, not just a statement of bylaws. And I know you have heard this message already from your pulpit many times. I looked over newsletters, and this has been a theme since at least the election, if not before. And I know that some of you are still deeply engaged in the current political and cultural upheaval that is gripping our country. I suspect others of you may be wearying of the political moment, and perhaps even of liberal hand-wringing, if that's the right way to call it. However you currently feel about this moment, my aim this morning is to connect what is happening to all of us together here in New Jersey, across the country, and indeed the world to some extent, to connect that to what is happening in your own lives, in your own spiritual search for truth and for meaning. You will hear me use the word redemption today, too, because I am interested in the idea of what resources that we can muster, that you can muster to redeem, to buy back, in that ancient use of the phrase, some piece of this moment in time. When people make a mistake in a transaction in a business setting, for example, sometimes they will say to the one who's been shortchanged, "How can I make that right for you? Let me make that right for you." I think it's the same question we need to be asking of ourselves, of this religion, and of our communities. How can we make this right again? How can we redeem this moment? Let me say one more thing about this work before we dive deeply into what the signs of the times might be and the resources that we have at hand, internal spiritual resources and very practical resources like UUOM&J and many other things I'm sure you're doing. And that's to say this. All of us are called to reach beyond ourselves and outside our comfort zone. That's part of being human. I say that also knowing that some of you in the congregation this morning are bowed down under tremendous weight that only you know. That there is also real pain and suffering and weariness in some hearts here today. Today may not be your day for doing much beyond surviving into tomorrow. But that is exactly the genius of religious life. That is what partly makes it worthwhile coming here Sunday after Sunday, forming roots and growing wings, in the words of our hymn. Because someone will be here. Someone will be keeping the light on for you in this space that we call a congregation or a movement. UUOM&J will have a light on for you if you can't do this work for a while. We will lift you up and we will carry you on, but we will not let you off entirely or for long. Because over centuries of pilgrimage and soul searching, people of faith across all traditions and times have realized that it is neither good for us to go this alone nor to leave each other on the side. Recall this morning's reading from Talmud that Peter read so well. Do not be daunted by the enormity of the world's grief. Love mercy now. Do justly now. Walk humbly now. Because you are not obligated to complete this work, but neither are you free to abandon it. So all of this is well and good and noted. But how do we actually figure out what we are meant to do in the first place? And I don't know about you, but everyone I'm talking to is overwhelmed by the moment. The rush of news, all of the things that seem to arise day after day that tug at fundamental thoughts and beliefs we had about how things are to work. There is so much to do, it can be absolutely overwhelming thinking about how to make even the smallest dent. So we need to look at signs of the times and focus in on some things. We need to think marathon, not sprint. So I'm going to come back to that now. The signs of the times, what are they? They could be manifold. It's an amazing and interesting expression. I wasn't sure where it came from. It turns out in English, the first time that we see it is in the King James Version of the Bible. It's one of those magical moments of pure English poetry that those early translators crafted as they read through Greek and Latin and Jewish texts. And the translators of the King James Bible were referencing a far more ancient idea, however, and that is of a sign, something very specific, often symbolic, but usually real, that illustrates a larger truth. Think the lunch counters in the 60s sit-ins, a sign of the times. The phrase in English appears first in the 16th chapter of Matthew, and I want to read it to you because it also dovetails with our times today, I think. And it's where Jesus is making that familiar stand he makes against the powers that be, against the power elite of his own time. They often are arguing, trying to trip one another up. And this starts out with the religious leadership calling Jesus out on his supposed supernatural powers. Then the Pharisees and Sadducees came and tested Jesus by asking him to show them a sign from heaven. But he replied, "When evening comes, you say, 'The weather will be fair, for the sky is red.' And in the morning, 'Today it will be stormy, for the sky is red and overcast.' You know how to interpret the appearance of the sky, but not the signs of the times." Jesus, in this reading, is asking the Pharisees and Sadducees not to care about a sign from heaven, something supernatural. He's saying, pay attention to my message. Pay attention to this moment in time. Are you on the right side of this moment or not? And is this even the right question to be asking me or asking anyone? That's how I read it. How do we choose to see things? How do we choose to interpret what is going on with accuracy? Some things, and other things we cover our eyes. I think of this in some ways as walking past the homeless phenomenon, or buying food when we know how it's been treated. And it's something we don't agree with, and yet we willfully sometimes walk by. And I say that knowing that we can't change all the hurts of the world every moment. There's no way. But the important part is that we don't see those moments as disconnected from us. So while we may not be able to help every person we see on the street, we fundamentally understand the fact they are there is a sign that we are not doing something right, that our culture still has work to do. We are connected to that moment in time. So let me tell you about one of the signs, my signs of the times, and there will be many. If we had a two-hour discussion this morning between us, we could come up with 100. But mine goes back to a time that now seems almost long ago, before the election, but remains with me to this day as a warning and also as something that I fear we will see further on into the future, perhaps becoming worse. And it's that image, I'm sure you know it as well, of the special education therapist, a black man lying on the pavement with his hands in the air while his autistic student, if you remember this image, was sitting next to him, I think with a toy car, and of being shot in the leg at least once by one of the two policemen on the scene, who, by the way, were firing from 10 to 20 feet away from behind a telephone pole. This is how the interaction was described in a July 21st Washington Post article about that scene in North Miami, this sign of our times. In moments recorded during the encounter Monday, Kinsey can be heard trying to calm the man with autism sitting next to him. That man, who also was not identified, had apparently wandered away from a group home where Kinsey works as a behavioral therapist. Kinsey says, "When the bullet hit me, I'm like, I still got my hands up in the air." The recording, the account goes on, was the latest in the seemingly unending stream of violent encounters between police and black men captured on camera and propelled into our national consciousness. The systemic unfairness and even hostility of our criminal justice system towards people of color is not the only sign of the times, of course, but it is one that has indelibly marked our current era. We cannot walk away from that sign. And it will, I'm afraid, only be made worse by the seeming indifference and even patent hostility on the part of people in great places of power now in our country. Some within the Christian community do a really good job of connecting that sign of the times with a faith stance, with a trying to live faithful lives. Some see systemic racism as taking on almost apocalyptic proportions, shifting our culture in such a way that we either have to move to the other side of it or we'll go down. From the Catholic magazine America, hardly one of the great progressive rags of our times, this observation: one of the apocalyptic signs mentioned in the gospel is called the dismay of nations. This is certainly evident today, and unlike many times in the past, we are all personally affected by it. Some of us know people who lost their lives in acts of terror or war. Fear has made us suspicious of people of other races or other religious beliefs. Sometimes our anger has grown into a desire for revenge, and our fear has taken on features of paranoia. This, by the way, written before the election. The dismay of nations. Can you think of a more apt phrase, in a way, to describe the current feeling so many of us have? Not all of us, let's be clear, but many of us. I wonder, for those of you more conscious of the late 60s than I was, if the feeling out there today mirrors at least in some way that sense in the country when we had the assassinations of first JFK and Malcolm X and King. Among some, at least, the dismay is palpable. And I have to think that even many social and fiscal conservatives feel dismay at the direction that the current president is taking. The poet Yeats gets at something very similar in his famous poem, The Second Coming. He wrote it in 1919, and in it he laments the worries and traumas of his own time. And this connects us to our past, that we are not the first to go through this, nor will we be the last. This was in the wake of the First World War and bloody revolutions in Ireland and across Europe. You will recognize, some of you, these words. Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the center cannot hold. Mere anarchy is loosed upon the world. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Perhaps this has always been true in its way, that the best have kindness and a kind of self-reflectiveness at their core. We certainly talk about this. I heard the kids sort of learning about that this morning. Be gentle, be kind, take responsibility, go softly. While the worst or the worse in us nurses grudges and a lingering anger that lashes out at those around them, the problem is always out there, never in here. This is not a spiritual truth. Other things are true as well. Truths not captured by Yeats or the headlines even these days. The reason perhaps you're here this morning is to hear some of that truth, to remember that spiritual life, thoughtful moral living, calls us out in a very different way. Here then is the great hope and dilemma of our lives as I see it today, that we squeeze meaning out of this moment, even while we sometimes watch it falling apart around our ears. And do you see the connection between personal life and common life, community life? Both those things can happen, that we watch the center dissolve and we have to squeeze meaning out of it to keep going forward. And the hope, of course, is that we lift up kindness and justice and self-reflection in the face of any who would mock or deny it, the Sadducees and Pharisees of our own times. And then the other question becomes, what are we going to do to redeem this moment in time? And my answer to you is reflective of that Talmudic teaching that must go back hundreds, if not thousands, of years. We are not obligated to complete this work, but there is no way we are going to abandon it. This is a good moment for me to say something about the how part, the making good again. How do we do that? There will be also many answers in this room, and we've seen that across the internet and in all kinds of powerful gatherings. But one answer, and the reason I'm here this morning, is through our own ministry that holds both our spiritual values and public policy, our way of being in the world together. And that is the ULMNJ. I want to tell you how proud I am to be the one standing here telling you that over the past 8 to 9 years, with the help of people just like you and this congregation, we have created a social justice ministry, probably one of the preeminent ones, and I can say that because I'm new. I didn't start this. I'm just stepping in. But probably one of the preeminent ones in the country. There are 25 such social justice ministries across every state, those 25 states. And this in California are probably the strongest. And I give great credit to those who've come before me to make that happen. And what do? We are a public voice. Because congregations were asking, we knew we were small, and we wanted to amplify our ability to say something about things we cared about in the public realm. We wanted to say that equal marriage rights mattered. We wanted to say that racism was something that needs to be in our past, not in our future. And we wanted to say that women's rights are human rights. We wanted to say many things, and we needed to amplify that voice. And so you created, across the state, many congregations, created something called the UU Legislative Ministry. We now have 6 task forces and focus specifically on issues that you have said you care most about. Those include gun violence prevention. They include women's reproductive rights. They include income equality and economic justice, environmental justice, and criminal justice reform. Those are our 6 current task forces. I'd want you to know that we are here for you. We have liaisons in every one of the congregations. We have lots of ways for you to get involved. And I know some of you are doing Indivisible or doing party politics, and that all of that is terrific. But if you would like to be grounded in these principles that you call your own, the UU principles, also in the public policy sphere, we'd love to have you. And I will stick around afterwards to talk more about that. You might be interested in attending our April plenary, which is in Ridgewood, a little far from here, but not too bad. And I hope your chorus might be going to Music Fest, which will be in Paramus on March 18th. And if not, you should just come and hear choruses from across the state will be singing in support of this ministry. Any of those things that you care about and that you want to connect to your own spiritual search, I invite you to join us, because I think that's what we bring, that relationship that's different from many other excellent groups that are doing important work now. A religious faith voice that isn't going anywhere. It's here to stay, and it's grounded in our congregations. And we are a moral voice and a faith voice in Trenton and across the state together to say, this is where we stand, and we will not waver. We're rolling out soon some work on sanctuary congregations and supporting sanctuary for undocumented immigrant families, many of whom are being harshly and in some cases wrongly deported off, taken to what's in effect prison, sometimes separated from their family, who've been here for years. We're working hard on that with Ted Fetter, our chair of our Immigration Justice Task Force from the Princeton Church. There are many signs of the times, and there are many ways to get at them, to do something, not to take on all that weight of the world on our own backs. That is not healthy, but also not to abandon that work because we're overwhelmed or our jobs have taken over or we're not feeling great in our bodies, but to come together and somehow together move this faith moment forward, and also to stand against things that we know are wrong. It's very important. Some of the signs of the time are downright scary, while others are very inspiring. Stay strong in the struggle here in East Brunswick, the ones unique to your congregation and also to your own life. That is part of the religious genius as well, to link those two and to be strong when you can be and to rest when you need to. We can and will accomplish much together, you and I and everyone who labors on the side of the angels or tries. I'm going to ask you not to wait to claim your birthright, the privilege of speaking up, because it is a privilege of speaking out, of aligning yourselves with goodness, despite your busyness and those pinging phones and your to-do lists. Because you have a resource here in the congregation, but also in this legislative ministry. We have gathered here in community over the years to further the good work and to amplify our voice in a way no one of our congregations ourselves could do. In the meantime, may you find your way forward in these times, and may you do what it is in your power to do to heal the world. We walk together, you and I, we do. And we will not abandon this world or each other along the way. We have faith, whether we are theists or atheists, agnostics or firm believers. We have faith in the power of beloved community. We have faith in our deepest principles. and a calling to accompany each other and the world in the great pilgrimage of life. It is a privilege to be here with you, and I hope that you feel the privilege of life and the privilege of being connected this way and of moving forward with hope. Because it's the only way we will redeem this world, and actually, it's the only way to redeem our own lives. It's a joyful moment at a scary time. One step at a time. Amen.